Ladies and gentlemen, we are now boarding Group A. Please have your boarding passes ready to scan. If your phone is cracked, old, or was chewed up by your Chihuahua travel companion, please refrain from holding up the line. Instead, go to Verizon and trade in any phone in any condition from one of their top brands for the new Samsung Galaxy S25 Plus with Galaxy AI and a watch and tab on any plan. Only on Verizon.
With new line on my plan. Service plan required for watch and tab. Additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hey, Blendos, on this week's show, we are declaring the best picture winner of the century. Hello, Blenders, and welcome to episode number 336 of Real Blend, the podcast that bet big money on the Texans making the Super Bowl, baby. How we doing on that bet, Jakey? Good? Looking good? Stroud?
I wouldn't have made that bet.
Stroud and the boys getting us there?
No, I wouldn't have made that bet, baby. You know, we made the mistake of sneezing near Patrick Mahomes and just had a flag thrown. We looked at him once, yeah. Flag thrown, roughing the passer.
I'll tell you the
secret. We said hello to him, flag thrown, roughing the passer.
The secret that my team found out, Jake, is that you can never lose the Super Bowl if you don't make the playoffs.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. I think you don't lose 100% of the shots you don't take, right?
That's exactly what the great one said.
It's a good mantra. On this week's show, we are going to play a fun game where we declare the best picture winner of the century. So we'll explain that when we get a little bit closer to it. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor at Cinema Blend and a co-host of the Real Blend podcast. This week in particular, joined by Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago, Gabe Kovach graduating up to the co-host chair. Kev McCarthy is not with us this week, which explains why, as you guys will find out. Yes, I know we teased that we're going to be doing the fantasy draft. Gabe, what's the status of the fantasy draft at this point?
We're still going to do the fantasy draft.
Good.
Right now, we have it earmarked for the first week of February. So Okay. Plenty of time before some big releases come out. So far, Nothing crazy is out. So we should get it in just in time. But
I really wanted Flight Risk.
You can have it if you want. we'll reveal last year's winner in that episode, and we'll do the draft. It's a fun one. But yes, just scheduling stuff this week, so we're shifting, but it will still happen.
To the surprise of no one who's listening to this show, it's very difficult to get all of us together under one roof, even in the quote unquote slow times of the year, when something like Flight Risk is coming to theaters. We'll talk about that in a second. If you're watching us on YouTube, hello. Thank you very much for joining us. Heads down, hit subscribe, turn on notifications, alert a friend or a family member that the show is available. Of course, we're available all different places you get your podcast needs met. Sign up for Real Blend Premium if you would like to. We'll get you an ad-free version of the show. Premium. You can check the description for information on where you can sign up. There was something else I wanted to bring up, and now I'm forgetting.
You know, Sean, while you think about that,
yeah,
something that we don't talk about
I know what it is.
In our housekeeping, which we don't need to talk about all the time. But if there are people that want to sign up for the premium feed and you've never subscribed before, there is a catalog, an archive of like 150 something premium episodes that we did, little bonus episode podcasts that we did back in the day as part of that feed, that if you join, you unlock that archive.
It's a snapshot of an unusual time in the show's history.
Yes, and then you can come, message us and tell us how wrong we were 5 years ago.
The premium was the Wild West back when we were doing that, and we had a lot of fun conversations.
Those were good times.
It was. It definitely was. I wish we had so much more time to do
that. There's nothing like a paywall to make you feel free, you know.
Yeah,
true. It was for the real ones.
The other thing I wanted to bring up is that you're listening to this on Friday and you're like, I can't wait to hear what the guys are going to say about the Oscar nominations. Right. But we're recording this on Wednesday, unfortunately. So this is a weird time of year. Everything kind of got delayed because of the things that were happening in Los Angeles. And now the Oscar nominations, which feels really weird, are going to take place on a Thursday.
Yeah.
And in addition to things feeling weird, Critics' Choice is going to be on a Friday. Like, it's just, this is a weird season.
Well, we could give Gabe like some like generic sentences that he could fill in movie titles.
Good
like,
idea.
I can't believe Wicked got that many nominations. Can you believe Dune Part 2 got 8 nominations?
This is great. Keep going.
I got more. I got more.
John, can you give me Tenet's back?
Tenet's back? Hold on. Let me just rattle through a few of them. Okay. Nosferatu, Emilia Perez. 2 and Part 2. Choose those as you need them.
And then go through all the numbers. 1, 2, 3. Now you can fit all the numbers. Yeah. This is gold, baby.
What do you... Okay, for real, preliminary projecting ahead, what do you... What would you love to see leading the nominations?
I'll give you guys one, because this is dated as soon as we air this. I'll give you guys each one prediction or hopeful or whatever. Pick what you got.
Hope. Doesn't be a bold prediction, but a hope.
Here's what I'll say is that I hope, I don't think it's going to be the case, but it'd be really great if Dune got something more above the line other than Best Picture.
Okay.
Like the fact that Denis, who did not get nominated for Part 1,
right,
is not in contention for a Best Director slot for Part 2 is insane.
It's pretty insane. It is.
How do you look at that movie and not say that deserves one of the Best Director slot, one of the 5 Best Director slots? Like, it's ridiculous.
Tangent, but speaking of Dune, R.I.P. David Lynch. R.I.P. David Lynch.
Oh, yes. That's true.
Yes. Last time. Yeah, we should shout out.
I mean, as a fan of Lost and X-Files, you know, so many of my favorite pieces of pop culture would not exist if not for him. You know, Twin Peaks was so influential.
Here's the thing. I'm not a David Lynch guy.
That's kind of his beauty, though, is he was very particular.
I deeply respect what he does.
Yeah, exactly.
But
does
like,
Elephant Man make you weep? Elephant Man makes me weep.
Elephant Man is probably his most conventional, you know?
Mm-hmm, sure.
But like, I can't get through Eraserhead. And Blue Velvet's bizarre. Like, I don't sit down.
Were you a Twin Peaks fan?
No, not really. No. Okay. I watched a good amount of it, and then I was just like, I can't.
Okay.
It's fine. So that's my 2025 confession.
Is your favorite David Lynch the last scene of Fablements?
He is great in that. I like Straight Story, because Straight Story is a pretty basic conventional down the middle David Lynch story. Yeah. So I don't know. I never quite got it.
What's your one hopeful for the Oscars? Sorry.
The Substance. I want to see the three ladies from The Substance represented. I'd like to see Demi Moore.
I don't know if Quali nomination. Gets in. I don't think Quali gets in.
I would like to see Quali get in, and I'd like to see Coralie Fargeol.
I think she director. Does. I think she gets a director slot, and I think Demi gets actress. But I think Quali. I think you know, it's all we always talk about. It's the, you know, or did you strike at the right minute? And I think Jamie Lee Curtis and Monica Barbaro were striking at the right minute, right as Quali was fading off.
I'd be really happy if Monica Barbaro also.
I think Barbaro and Jamie Lee Curtis get in.
She was true. Jamie Lee Curtis for what?
Last movie? Showman, Last Showgirl.
Oh, do you know? I never even saw that movie. I haven't even seen it. Yeah, that's what. I mean, who's seen it?
I didn't care for it.
Well, I guess
she's got that like win, what they call the win afterglow.
These are dated takes, right?
I can't believe Monica Barbaro was nominated
for Best Supporting Actress. The headlines tomorrow are Denis Villeneuve, frontrunner for Best Director.
I can't believe they gave him all 5 Best Director slots.
All right, speaking of Best Pictures, we're going to play a little game. This is the best picture winner of the century so far. We've had some comments have been asking us, hey, can you guys have a discussion about, you know, this is 2025 and we're at the quarter of the century. Let's talk about the movies that have happened from this point on. We figured the best way to potentially do it is to focus on best picture winners. And so Gabe has a bracket.
I'm so excited about this.
Yeah, this is gonna be a lot of fun.
You know what I think is interesting about this? A lot of the winners that I love, I feel like are ones that Sean doesn't necessarily love.
We definitely will split on a lot of these.
Yes. Oh, so, God, already the first one out the gate.
All right. Let me also just sort of say, with all due respect and love to our brother, Kevin McCarthy, I'm glad he's not here today.
Based off of this first matchup, and if you're not watching us on YouTube, you can't see what the first matchup is. But based off the first matchup, I can tell you I'm glad that Kevin's not here today.
Yes.
I'll give us a quick intro, and then we can get into it. We're doing this bracket style, so these films are going head-to-head. As far as seeding, I seeded them for a release year. So, and then I tried to pair them accordingly. So like the oldest film and the newest film are together. And then going on from there.
That's interesting. Good way to do it.
The seeding from round one on, I don't know that I followed traditional bracket tournament seeding, but the first round is organized according to year, which was a fun little thing to see some matchups come together. So these are going to go head to head. And if you're looking at the bracket on YouTube, you see that it's kind of one sided. That's just because we have the number of films that we have. The graphic will look a little different with the sort of the website that we're using. But at the end of this, we will have declared the best picture winner of the century. Parentheses so far.
Yeah.
And we're starting off with Oppenheimer or Gladiator.
I'm sorry. I think Gladiator is better. I know. Yeah, I know that's
silly.
I'm sorry. I would prefer. I would watch Gladiator 10 times before I watch Oppenheimer again.
No, you wouldn't.
I would. I'm sorry. That's.
So here's why this is fun. The seating is fun because we're so close to Oppenheimer right now.
Sure,
and that's a big factor. We're 25 years removed from Gladiator. This is hard for me to pick because I think they're both wildly entertaining for different reasons.
Yes, I entertaining is not the word I would use to describe Oppenheimer.
Oh, I think it's.
I think Gladiator. Really, I think Zimmer's score, Ridley's direction. I'm sorry. I like the sword and sandals epic. I'm going Gladiator.
This is interesting too because we have probably had the opportunity to rewatch the initial Gladiator because of the sequel, which just came out. Yeah. So, this is Gladiator isn't as far removed because it's been in the conversation somewhat lately. However, to me, the script for Oppenheimer is a seamless masterpiece. And I'm with Gabe in the fact that it's more playful than most of Nolan's films. Because of performances like, Matt Damon and even Killian to a certain extent. I'm going Oppenheimer, and to me it's honestly not even that close.
There's no lose here. I'm looking ahead. I'm cheating and looking ahead to some of the matchups where if I don't get the one I want, I'm going to throw a shit fit. This one, like if you guys move forward with Oppenheimer, it is what it is. I vote Gladiator.
Okay. I agree with Jake. I agree with Jake in that I wouldn't be upset if either of these moved on. And it's probably maybe it is a good thing that we don't have four people here because then we get into that tie and we flip a coin or whatever. I'm going to go Oppenheimer, and I admit that maybe that's
with Kevin here.
Well, that's true. But my point being, I will go with Oppenheimer. That's kind of the deciding factor with the three of us. But Gladiator would have gone far against many of these other films on here.
Sorry, Ridley. Should I answer my questions?
Up next, we have The Shape of Water versus The Departed.
Shape of Water.
No,
Shape of
Water. Sean!
It's Shape of Water.
The Shape of Water. No!
It's Shape of Water.
No, easily. It's The Departed.
It's definitely not The Departed.
Are you a fish?
Dude, The Shape of Water is
The Shape
gorgeous.
Of Water is not good.
No, it is very good. I
vote The Departed.
You've been misled.
I already dislike this bracket.
You've been misled in thinking that The Shape of Water is not good and that The Departed
is
great.
The only thing you have for The Departed to talk about is the bad Boston accents.
Yeah.
As I have said many a time, the Departed is someone trying their best to do Scorsese. Well,
and The Departed. Jake, and we're not, we're judging the movies, but I think there is when we talk about like the,
I love The Departed.
with like the sort of color on a film, given its best picture win or loss, The Departed is kind of disappointing as the best picture win to Sean's point of it not feeling like the best version of a movie that he's already made. You know, and so there's something disappointing about that. The ship water, to me, I loved it at the time. I love it still. I think it's absolutely gorgeous. And Guillermo firing at all cylinders in only the way Guillermo can.
Well, and the way that, that Jake says that he loves Sword and Sandals films, this kind of aesthetic that is in The Shape of Water, that's also in, what's the name of that game? Is it Biosphere or Bio?
BioShock.
BioShock. That kind of like retro art deco, but that Guillermo uses throughout the course. He also uses it in, was it Nightmare Alley? Is that the name of the movie that he made with Bradley Cooper? Like he builds those kinds of worlds.
Like a gothic meets like noir.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he loves telling love stories with creatures, and those are, you know, tale as old as time sort of deal, but modernizes it. And I just think it's a beautiful, 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 beautiful film that Jake is sleeping
keep
on.
Keep in mind, I didn't put it on. It wasn't on my top 10 list the year it came out, and The Departed was my number one the year it
such
came out.
It's such a shame.
It is a shame. We should rewatch it.
I tried, man.
Yeah, you did try to rewatch it.
Now, remember, like both of those movies, I have tried to convince myself that I like, and I cannot get into them. I cannot. I appreciate things about them, but you know, I'm sorry. I guess Scorsese bounces off you.
The Shape of Water is a really special film for me. I think that Guillermo putting a monster in the role of the love interest of someone who is in the love story strips down sort of to the core of what a love story is. And it takes all the sort of vanity of it away. And you're kind of seeing these two beings fall in love. And I think the fact that that's coming from Guillermo del Toro, someone who has made a career on creature design and a love of creature design, and what that says about his filmography and him reflecting on his own sort of passion for storytelling in that genre. I love it.
And the work
Go ahead, Sean.
Well, I was going to say the work of Doug Jones, fantastic as the creature.
Yeah. And I love Doug Jones.
Remember the Sally Hawkins run that we were on for a long time? Yeah. Like, she was in a lot of things and is very good. I'm not quite sure why she doesn't work anymore.
And just sticking on Doug Jones, it also felt like a Doug Jones getting his flowers. Like, I think he was always respected in his space, but this felt like a starring role in a different way than some of his creature work had before, which I think thought was awesome.
I think I've always appreciated the monsters and the production design of a Del Toro film, but never the actual film itself. I think I always sort of like certain aesthetics of his movies, but I don't think I ever truly like I like sort of the monsters and the you know of Pacific Rim, and I like some of the creature designs of Hellboy, but wasn't particularly a massive Hellboy fan. I think I've just had to come around to the terms that like I like looking at his movies, but I don't particularly love
Jake, did you like when the rat ran across the balcony?
I loved it. You know why? Because he was a rat. Just like that rat.
Oh, is that why he did it?
Yeah.
Oh, now I get it. It's brilliant. Right.
We should just go have sex with a fish.
Now, I will say two things allow me. One, The Shape of Water is moving on.
Oh, God, I hate this bracket already.
And before we get to this next matchup, we have a quick ad break.
No!
We're taking a quick break, and we'll be right back to discuss The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King versus Nomadland.
I swear to Christ, Sean.
Your old or broken phone can let you down, but at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence with a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. After all, you don't want your old phone to die on you when you're lost.
Perfect.
Or for your broken phone to glitch at the worst possible time.
Hey, can I get your number?
Oh. Trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Buy two, get two free on 12 packs of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up with your card. And we've lowered prices. You can save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
All right, we are back. And we're picking things back up with The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King versus Nomadland.
Sean, I swear to my brother in Christ, man.
Yeah.
If you make the wrong choice here.
Now, yeah. Is this a unanimous?
I think it's Return of the King.
Yes, it is.
Before we get to Return of the King, I do want to give some flowers. Did everyone here like Nomadland?
I did not.
I liked it.
Yeah. I liked Nomadland.
I thought it was perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. It's a movie that won Best Picture that up until this very moment, I forgot existed.
It's not one that I like. Yeah, it doesn't hit something that I want to rewatch, and I don't necessarily like. It's not a movie that I'm like, ooh, let's watch this with someone who hasn't seen it.
Right.
I
would be able to say that about far too many of these as we go through them.
You're not wrong.
The best picture winners are not films where I'm like, ooh, we got to watch fill in the blank. And Nomadland is unfortunately one of those movies.
Yeah. But now as unanimous Lord of the Rings, the Return of the King.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, in its way, representing the trilogy, you know.
And without a doubt, like as the one on the show who doesn't care for these movies, it doesn't mean I can't recognize what it's doing. I mean, it's like it's one of the best examples of these types of films. I just don't necessarily love the good genre, ones. But sure, if you say so. And it's the culmination, you know, it's like that's. Right. Yeah, I mean it's definitely.
And when we're talking about Best Picture, you know, I don't think the Oscars always have to be the difficulty award, but the idea of the production of shooting all of those and sort of all of the ground that was broken in the making of that and continues to be facilitated in the industry with Weta and all of that, monumental moment for the industry. And that Return of the King, I think, is
this may shock you, but I guess it really doesn't matter which Lord of the Rings movie was there. I would have gone with it over Nomad.
Yeah.
Which I think really has a Frances McDormand performance, and I can't remember much else about it. I hate to say.
No.
Yeah. So Chloe Zhao, great filmmaker. I mean, while we're here, I'll just Eternals got a bad rap, but I'll move on. Eternals got a bad rap. It's better than people think.
There you go.
It can't be worse.
Next we have Moonlight versus No Country for Old Men.
All right, this may be controversial, but mine is No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, mine's No Country for Old Men.
No Country, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I think that's one of the greatest Coen Brothers movies of all time.
One of the greatest movies.
The fact that I know in the way that you hate the Departed is Scorsese's big Oscar movie. I know the Coen Brothers had won previously for screenplay for Fargo, but arguably No Country is their big Oscar winning movie.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the fact that No Country is their big Oscar? I'm cool with it.
I'm totally fine with it. Yeah.
I rewatched it about a year ago and it holds. Oh no, yeah. I rewatched it to get ready to talk to Deacons, and it's incredible.
I'll even say, and perhaps because it's an adaptation of a book and not a straight screenplay.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel entirely like a Coen Brothers movie. Cause even something like Fargo, which is one of their darker films.
Yeah.
Has a lot of humor in it.
Super Coen. Oh my God. It's so funny.
Yeah. Whereas No Country is to me like terrifying.
Yeah. There's like little splashes of like the old man across the counter in the flipping a coin moment, the call it moment feels like a Coen Brothers character, or when Anton Chigurh is looking for Josh Brolin and like there's the woman who's sort of behind the desk. A lot of times it's like the secondary, the tertiary characters are feel like Coen. But you're right. You're totally right about that.
But Tommy Lee Jones, terrific performance.
Yeah.
Brolin, incredible.
Yeah.
And obviously Javier. So, yeah.
Yeah. I always love that line. Oh, hail's bail, Sheriff. They even shot the dog.
And Moonlight is a terrific film. But I don't think that it. I don't know. I would go No Country.
A notorious year Best Picture winner at the Oscars.
Yeah,
obviously.
Yeah.
So let's play that. Let's play that out just for fun. If La La Land was in that spot,
I still would go No Country.
I'd still go No Country. Yeah.
You know what? I would too.
La La Land was my number one.
I adore La La Land. Yeah. I would still take No Country.
To close at your point, if it was Moonlight versus La La Land, I would take La La Land.
I would too.
La La Land.
Yeah,
I would too.
We La La Land in concert is coming to Chicago, and I heard a little chunk of their dance together, their big dance together.
Nice.
and on the show this morning, and it just in that little moment was like, God, I love that movie.
I mean, I'd pull up the opening sequence of them on the highway, you know, yeah. that it's to so get ready creative.
For work. Oh, yeah. Put a tie on.
A tie.
Yeah. you dress down for the show. You dress down for the show. All right. No Country for Old Men moves on.
Yes.
And that brings us to Parasite versus Million Dollar Baby.
Parasite.
I'm Parasite.
I'm going to say Parasite.
Yeah, I'm Parasite.
I don't love Million Dollar Baby.
No.
I like it a lot.
Does it hold up, though? I can't think of the last time that I saw it, but anytime I see something from it, I feel like it doesn't hold up.
I don't love that that's Morgan Freeman's Oscar-winning performance.
Oh, I didn't even know that was the case, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It probably doesn't hold up. It got hammered for being overly maudlin at the time. Okay. But the twist, and I won't reveal it, caught me off guard when it happened.
She's actually a billion-dollar baby.
Inflation.
She's not a baby at all.
That's a grown woman.
I'm also watching Unforgiven on WB.
That's a great movie.
Yeah. Parasite was just a sledgehammer when it came through. The commentary.
Parasite rocks.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So, yeah.
Which we get a new Bong Joon-ho this year, right? Yeah.
Yeah, we do. Mickey 17, baby.
March.
And it's his first movie since Parasite.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. We'll hopefully be talking more about Bong Joon-ho for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
All right. Parasite moves on unanimous. Then we have Spotlight versus Danny Boyle's Slumdog Millionaire.
This will be interesting.
Yeah. This is interesting. I don't have an immediate thought other than Spotlight is very good, but is it formulaic?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to vote for Slumdog Millionaire just because I'd rather watch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I recognize like Spotlight is a very good movie. Mm-hmm. Obviously about an incredibly important topic, but to me, Slumdog Millionaire just has more of a personality to it. And I think it's a better directed movie. I think it's a more difficult movie to pull off.
Yeah.
And did that introduce us to Dev Patel? Was that his first?
Yeah, I believe so.
I think so.
And I love Dev Patel. I think he's fantastic.
Yeah.
Green Knight. Was that Green Knight where he played?
Yeah.
Fucking awesome. And his movie he directed. Fantastic.
Was it Lion? Was he in the movie Lion?
He was in the movie Lion.
That was really good too. I'm going Slumdog too, and I'm surprising myself because I think Spotlight is terrific, but I think Spotlight could also have been a miniseries. It feels like a miniseries where you get like an above average cast and you're just like, everyone's really filing on all cylinders. Like on HBO. They're all great. Yeah. Yeah. They got Michael Keaton for this. This is amazing. Yeah. Look at this. This is great. But Slumdog, like Danny Boyle, has so much energy and style, and it comes through in every scene. It's the story is so unique. It's unlike anything you've ever seen before. I was really happy when it won Best Picture. It didn't feel like a Best Picture winner to me. Between these two, and I love journalism movies. I think Spotlight is a really well done film, but I'll go Slumdog in this one.
All right. Slumdog Millionaire. Green Book versus Crash.
What? Spotlight. Wow. That's wow. Wow.
I did not, like I said, the seating is the seating.
Green Book.
Fate did that to us.
I'm sorry. Good. I think Crash is actually a bad movie. Green Book to me is just harmless, but I think Crash is actually bad.
I'm going to say Crash.
Okay.
Just because it feels.
You think Green Book is bad?
No, it feels more.
Do you even have a reason?
It feels more interesting. It's more the collection. The hell if I know. I don't know.
Crash is offensive. Like Crash to me is offensive in the way that
here's the deal: is I haven't seen Crash
exactly. That's why I would say Green Book because I couldn't tell you anything about Crash.
Crash like marginalizes. It's like the broadest paintings of stereotypical LA people. Well, not that Green Book isn't stereotypical Southern.
That's kind of why this is a funny matchup, but it's a little. But yeesh. I mean, Viggo and Mahershala's dynamic alone. Like, I could watch the scenes that they're in together over and over again. Yeah. Because they're very
good. I'll tell you what. No one in Crash folds an entire pizza in half.
You know what? Why are we even talking about this?
Green book.
Green book. By default.
I'll never forget that scene. That was beautiful.
Right. Next, we have Birdman or the Unexpected Virtue of Ignorance versus the Hurt Locker.
I'm going to say Birdman.
Hmm.
I really like Birdman. That's a movie that to me has not necessarily, I feel like it has with a lot of people, but is not for me faded with time. And I gotta be honest with you. There's not much I remember what Hurt Locker is, but like I in the grand scheme of war films and Best Picture winners, I don't remember much. I remember that scene in the poster that we're looking at right now.
Yeah,
that's the opening scene. It's a great shot. Yeah, that's the opening scene, right?
It could be. No. I don't remember. I mean, that's the thing, is a lot of the scenes of the Hurt Locker are he's diffusing something.
Yeah, yeah. So they kind of bleed together. But I'm gonna say Birdman.
Hurt Locker has Hawkeye and Captain America in it, by the way.
That's true. That's true, and neither of them have a bow and arrow.
Yeah,
good point.
They were able to do that entire junket without answering a Marvel question.
Yes, they were.
That was the last time.
Those are the days.
that's what they think of fondly when they look back at Hurt Locker.
You know what? I should sit down across from Mackie at the Captain America junket and ask him Hurt Locker questions. I'm going Hurt Locker in this one. I don't really like Birdman.
Do you not? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it.
Gabe, you say Hurt Locker?
I'm saying Hurt Locker, yeah.
Okay.
I rewatched Hurt Locker recently. And, you know, in our comments, we get a lot of people that aren't liking their just random. Like, I don't think people that necessarily listen to the show. But I've picked up some of, like, the Tarantino talking about Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Kind of hate on it. And I'm like, really? Like, I thought it was very entertaining.
Congratulations, Hurt Locker. You just made it. You got to buy next week.
I would like to watch it again, to be honest with you. I've not seen it in forever. I wonder if it holds up.
God, some of these Best Picture winners are not great.
Next, we have Argo versus The Artist.
Argo. Can we just
Argo.
Move on?
Yeah,
can we just,
Argo. No, Argo.
Can we quickly move on?
Yes.
Should we let The Artist happen?
All right. Then we have Coda versus Chicago.
Chicago.
Yeah, I'm going to say Chicago. And I love Coda, but Chicago feels like a better Best Picture winner.
Yeah.
Wow, Coda is a the bottom? Perfectly fine Apple TV Plus movie.
the historied Apple TV Plus.
Shockingly, Jake, and you know this, like, how many Apple TV Plus movies have we watched for a junket that you just haven't thought of again?
Well, not just that, but like, you know, there was so much anticipation as to what was going to be the first streaming movie to win Best Picture.
Mm-hmm.
And Netflix got close so many times with Roma and Power of the Dog. And then the fact that it ended up being Coda was just sort of like, oh, okay. And
to be honest, Coda is a very sweet movie.
Yeah, I love Coda. Was on my top 10. I love Coda.
Very sweet. Yes. But it's another one where who amongst us has sat down and been like, all right, guys. Coda night.
It's Coda night.
It's Coda night.
Yeah.
But Chicago is highly entertaining.
Chicago.
Yeah.
Chicago. Woo. Chicago. Highly Chicago moves on, which brings us to 12 Years a Slave versus The King's Speech.
12 Years a Slave.
Yeah, I'm going to say 12 Years a Slave.
Do you guys not like The King's Speech?
I have a weird chip on my shoulder against that movie because it beat Social Network.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that 12 Years a Slave is a much better movie regardless.
Agreed.
But I will say I'm harder on The King's Speech than I probably should be. I do know I went back and rewatched it somewhat recently and I was like, yeah, this holds up. It's good.
But it feels good. Like a movie made to win Best Picture.
100%. And it is unfortunate in the fact that it beat much better films the year that it won, and so it gets dinged for that, whether that's unfairly or not.
Yeah, like Shakespeare in Love.
Yes, or Forrest Gump, or Gump.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's exactly why I asked that, because it just feels like there's an animosity towards The King's Speech. Whenever I watched it, I was like, "Well, this is fine. Like, this is also fun." And
who's Tom Hooper? Like, Tom Hooper has made shit movies after that. So, like, you go into it and you think, like, this is going to be terrible. As opposed
to Steve McQueen, who has done great stuff since 12 Years a Slave.
And also, 12 Years a Slave is incredible. Like, it's a really, really good movie.
Yes.
And Chiwetel's incredible, and Lupita's incredible. And
Lupita, Jesus.
Yeah, it's Michael a fantastic film. King's Speech just is better than people give it credit for.
Yeah.
But still wouldn't win this matchup.
Yeah.
12 Years a Slave, unanimous. Then we have A Beautiful Mind versus Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Wow.
There's some sort of connection here of A Beautiful Mind. I gotta give it to Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's just, to me, that's just an incredible accomplishment that I'm very happy won Best Picture.
Back to back, you're gonna disappoint Crow.
Yeah, you're doing that's a little bit of recency bias, I think. Beautiful Mind is a fantastic movie.
I voted for Gladiator, brother.
Crow can't get out of round one.
I'm voting Beautiful Mind, so I'm voting you. So it comes
the
down
fact
to
that
you.
Beautiful Mind could make it on, but Gladiator doesn't.
I was trying to get my answer in first so that I didn't have to be a deciding factor.
Yeah.
This is hard because I think Everything Everywhere All at Once is so unique, where A Beautiful Mind is great, but ultimately like a really well-made dramatic screenplay. I think I'm going Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I think you're right, Sean. It's a recency bias. I haven't seen A Beautiful Mind in a while, but
I don't think so, because there's a lot of movies on this list that I would have chosen over Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yeah. There's nothing else on this list like Everything Everywhere All at Once.
No.
Again, it's not bad. I'm not saying it's bad. Sure. I'm just saying I give A Beautiful Mind. Here's how I felt about A Beautiful Mind when I first watched it. I realized that Ron Howard had made a bunch of really, really good movies, and then he delivered like his master, like Ron
Dude,
Howard's masterpiece.
No,
it's better than Apollo 13.
No,
really? No. OK, I
no, it
with
is
that.
Not.
It is. Yeah, no, it is. You haven't seen it. And you haven't seen Beautiful Mind in a while.
That I when was the last time you watched Ed TV?
Last night.
Dude, I would.
I sat down and I said to the family, it's Ed TV night.
hot take.
And they said again.
Frost Nixon over Beautiful Mind.
Oh, Frost Nixon's really good.
Yeah. Frost Nixon's great.
Frost Nixon is great.
Underrated Ron Howard. Rush.
Oh, Rush is good, too. Yeah.
Ron Howard's just great.
As I was saying, he's made good movies. Yeah. He's the soft, gentle Mangold.
He doesn't get credit for being in a different vein, but a Spielberg like in that he can you can deliver him a good screenplay and he knows how to turn it into a good movie.
Interesting. Yeah.
Also a great movie. Lest we forget, Solo.
Correct. I said good screenplay. I said a good screenplay, a great film.
Solo. Hate you guys. I hate this show.
Everything Everywhere All at Once is moving on. We're going to throw to another break and we'll be right back to start round two and wrap up this bad boy. Not this episode, but this bracket and then the episode. All right. We are back from the break, and we're starting out round two with Oppenheimer versus The Shape of Water.
It's easy for me. It's Oppenheimer.
I believe it is Oppenheimer.
Yeah. Still Oppenheimer. Yeah.
Yes, but The Shape of Water, I said it in the first
Shape of Water again. Swims with the fishes.
Is an amazing film.
You get it, Sean? Because he's a fish.
I don't get it. Can you explain to me?
He's a fish.
Oh, gotcha.
All right, Oppenheimer moves on. Then we have The Lord of the Rings, The Return of the King versus
Now.
No Country for Old Wizards.
Stop fucking around. It's No Country for Old Men. Stop it.
Honestly?
Yeah, no. Stop it. One is a movie.
All right, Jake.
And the other is cinema.
Is Return of the King the best Lord of the Rings?
A lot of people would say yes. I would say no.
Okay, so then
Jake likes Fellowship.
I understand. Like Fellowship. So now with that in mind.
See that, but my issue is that I feel like it's representing Lord of the Rings as a whole.
That's what I'm saying. So take away that it is, and instead, Return of the King versus No Country for Old Men. Where do you go?
I'm still going Lord of the Rings.
Fuck.
Do the right thing here, Gabe.
I mean, it's,
you usually love being the tiebreaker.
It's right fun thing. Sometimes. It's, here's the thing. I think I'm going to have to fall back on.
Dude,
the Return of the King and Lord of the Rings being as incredible as it is. Like, I understand Sean's point of view. I disagree with his point of view, but I understand. No one.
My friends, you bow to. I feel more emotions in that line than anything that I feel. Now, I'm not knocking. I fucking love No Country for Old Men. I love No Country for Old Men. But the fact that Return of the King is not the best Lord of the Rings and still the accomplishment it is.
Yes. And here's my deciding factor of why I'm going Lord of the Rings. And not that this is necessarily fair to No Country. I just need something to base this on. And that is, No Country for Old Men didn't change cinema. Mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings very much did.
Yeah. Yeah. Lord of the Rings is like the marker. Like depending on how Dune Messiah turns out, Lord of the Rings is like the last great trilogy.
Yeah.
Like,
you could argue that the MCU doesn't exist. You could argue that the MCU doesn't exist in the scale that it does without a Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
Sort of proving the formula of these big pictures.
I'm sorry, I thought we were just debating one movie against the other movie, and Lord of the Rings is not as good.
You used the rest of Scorsese's filmography against The Departed.
That is true. You did do that.
In no conversation is Lord of the Rings Return of the King a better movie than No Country for Old Men.
Except this conversation.
Well, this conversation is the best picture winner.
All right. That's fine. That's the Oscars are frequently wrong.
That's true.
And you guys are frequently wrong in this conversation.
All right. God, Sean gets pissy when he doesn't get his way. I've been a class act the entire way.
Totally. Parasite versus Slumdog Millionaire.
I have an unpopular opinion, and I'm going to say Slumdog.
You know, what an ironic matchup. Millionaire, Parasite.
Yeah. Funny. You know what? I'm going Slumdog still. I'm going Slumdog also.
Yeah.
Now, should we have voted Million Dollar Baby so it was Million Dollar Baby versus
million
Slumdog?
Million Dollar versus Million Dollar. Yeah.
Start over. Sean, sorry. You said you're going
Slumdog also.
Slumdog. All right. Slumdog moves on. Slumdog.
What would you have chosen, Gabe?
I was leaning Parasite. I could have gone either way. I'm happy to give Slumdog. I'll say Parasite so it has a vote, but I'm leaning Parasite for sure. Slumdog moves on. Green Book versus The Hurt Locker. Are we all
adios? Adios, Green Book.
Adios, Green Book.
Hurt Locker.
The Hurt Locker. Argo versus Chicago.
Chicago.
I choose Argo.
Chicago. That might be the funniest joke on this show ever. That's great.
It just fell into my lap. Chicago.
Oh, man.
That's great.
Oh, now I'm laughing at Sean though.
who went? Who voted already?
Jake, I vote Argo.
Yeah. Argo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love Argo.
I think I'm Chicago.
I think I'm Chicago as well. Argo's great.
It is good. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's really good. I like it a lot. But Chicago is Chicago.
Ironically, the guy with this backdrop didn't choose Chicago. <That's true. laughs> the thing about this city behind me?
What's that?
No way was in the movie Chicago.
True. Yeah, good point.
There you go. There you go. All right. Up next we have 12 Years a Slave versus Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Man, this is the hardest one.
Really?
I'm going Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I'm going.
I have mine, but I don't want to make this easy on Sean. Or harder, maybe.
I'll go Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Same.
Okay. That's I think 12 Years a Slave is so good.
It is. I mean, it's tremendous. It's
best picture winner. And it's.
Well, but here's the deal. At a certain point.
Yeah.
Our enjoyment of watching a movie is going to come into play.
Sure.
And as great as 12 Years a Slave is, and God knows it is, it's not an enjoyable movie to watch.
I know.
And at a certain point, enjoyment is going to give a movie an edge.
That's fine.
Next, we have Oppenheimer versus Return of the King.
It's Oppenheimer.
Jake?
I'm going Lord of the Rings.
It's Oppenheimer.
Attaboy, kid.
What would you have chosen between Attaboy. Oppenheimer and No Country?
That's
no
harder.
I would have chosen No Country.
That might be harder.
Wait, can we go back?
Yeah.
I would have chosen No Country.
Oppenheimer is perfect, though. Slumdog Millionaire versus The Hurt Locker.
Slumdog. Slumdog's making it.
Slumdog, I agree.
Slumdog's making it further than I think I thought it was.
So is Chicago.
Jesus.
Chicago or Everything Everywhere All at Once?
Everything Everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah.
Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Chicago has gone too far already.
All right. Oppenheimer.
Well, all right. This is crazy.
It's based on decisions y'all have made.
Wow. All right.
Well, now we know how the bracket's going to turn out.
Well,
wait, are we really about to have the last two Best Picture winners?
Yeah, we are.
Is it Oppenheimer? It's Oppenheimer, right?
For me, it is. Yeah,
Oppenheimer versus Slumdog Millionaire. Yeah, Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Okay, it's Oppenheimer.
No, in these two, I vote Everything Everywhere.
No, you do not.
What?
But that's the which one do you enjoy watching more? This is exactly what you're talking about. If I'm sitting down and these two are in front of me,
you said Beautiful Mind over Everything Ever. So Beautiful Mind, Oppenheimer. Where's that math?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. But between these two, the way that it's shaking out, I enjoy watching Everything Everywhere All at Once more than I do Oppenheimer. But this is a fucking coin flip. Yeah. I'm not mad. So whatever.
I'm picking Oppenheimer.
Are you both saying Oppenheimer?
Yeah.
I'm saying Oppenheimer.
This is wild. This is a wild.
And Kevin wasn't even here. No. What the hell? We failed. All right. Wow. So Jake, what did you text Gabe?
Gladiator. With backups being No Country and Return of the King.
Wow.
And I texted No Country.
So for context, I asked these boys to, I didn't give them much time to think about it or the list necessarily, but I said off the top of the dome, best picture winner of this century so far. Like, where's your mind going? Where are you at? Yeah. Jake said Gladiator. Sean said No Country. And neither of them made it past the second round. So is this process definitive? I don't know. But we did it.
It's for me to say, but yes.
But we have agreed that last year's Best Picture winner was the best of the century.
Turns out it's been for an hour screaming about recency bias.
It's been a perfect line upwards, 45 degrees.
Christ.
The whole century.
Wow. God, that's disappointing that we did that. But it's legitimately how it came out. So
yeah. Again, this is the fun bracket way. The bracket's not, is not perfect. Necessarily, maybe we'll revisit this. This year is going to be full of opportunities for us to do.
I'll tell you this much. Here's how I can a little bit like if you put Oppenheimer up against any of the films that are in contention this year, I'm picking Oppenheimer.
Right? Yes.
I'm just curious what would have to come down the pipe to be as good at maybe it's The Odyssey. Who knows? But something special is going to have to come along to dethrone Oppenheimer as one of the greatest films I've seen in the last 25 years.
What I want to hear in the comments, one, your thoughts on this, but two, do we want to see this format or this matchup? I don't know how to say it, this topic in a tier list format. Oh, we interesting. Tier list the best picture winners, and then we pick one of our A's as the quote unquote S masterpiece of the.
I mean, but I would say this whether he was here or not. I don't really want to do any tier list with Kevin, where Oppenheimer is in contention because
voting. We know his vote, but it doesn't mean you know.
But here's the thing too. I don't really and Gabe, I believe I understand exactly why you did this. It's easier to do it, but I don't think the best picture winner is the right way for us to do. Like if we had to pick 25 movies from the past 25 years.
No. Yeah. This is the best picture winner.
For sure.
Specifically.
Yeah. I think we should do like over the last 25 years, we each get to pick 8.
We did a draft like that once before.
Yeah.
Where we each brought choices and then we had to argue to see which ones made it in there.
I like that. That sounds like a best movie of the
century.
Anyway, we can discuss more later. Okay. But for the folks at home, Oppenheimer takes the cake.
Hey, congratulations, Chris Nolan.
Well, in this format.
I'm so glad things are finally working out well for that movie.
We have some time. We have some time left. So I'm going to throw to Sean to pick us back up.
Yes, I wanted to bring this topic up for this reason. Well, Nosferatu is available to stream digitally. And I think some people have been asking in the comments as well, too. They wanted us to sort of speak on it because we didn't get a chance to. We didn't get Eggers on the show. We did get Bill Skarsgård and Willem Dafoe, but we didn't give it a traditional review. And if I had given it a traditional review prior to rewatching it a second time for the home video release, I would have given it a mixed review. I would have given it somewhere around like a 3, 3.5. I rewatched it a second time, and this is almost just a way to sort of be like, hey, give all of these films another shot, like give them a chance. Nosferatu specifically, when I watched it the first time through, and you both can tell me if you agree with this or not, I was so focused on Orlok, right? Like the reveal of Count Orlok, what was he going to be like? What was his part in the movie? How important is it? And the second time through, because I knew how it all played out, I focused way more on Lily Rose Depp's character. And talking to Eggers today, he was like, it's her story. And the movie worked a lot better for me. I saw a lot more of things that confused me about the way that she behaved throughout the course of the movie made a lot more sense to me when you realize from the opening scene, she's calling out to him and then she's essentially in his spell for the entire time and the decisions that are being made. And for whatever reason, the second time through, it worked so much better for me.
Interesting.
I was super, super dialed into it.
Would you have put it on your top 10?
No. It might have gotten itself up to like a 4. Mm-hmm. Probably wouldn't have made top 10, but I definitely liked it more than I did the first
time. That's interesting. Cause I think correct me if I'm wrong. I think I was the first one in the group to see it.
Yes.
And expressed my, I hate to say this word, but this disappointment in it, having thought it was fine. But I mean, talk about a movie that I thought was tailor made for me.
Yeah.
And I just walked away going like, okay. I mean, my biggest hang up, and I don't know if I'll be able to get over it with a second viewing, which is that it just, look, obviously if you know the history, you know that Nosferatu is sort of a loose adaptation of Dracula, but Dracula it is. And doing a gothic sort of messed up toxic romance version of Dracula is in some form or fashion at least kind of spiritually connected to Coppola's Dracula. I just the whole time I just couldn't help but think that like this reminds me of Coppola's Dracula, but Coppola's Dracula is better.
Okay.
That was my hang up I couldn't get past.
And then because of this, he announced, ironically, the day we're recording, he announced he's doing a werewolf movie. And your initial reaction was, not really.
Like just because I feel like I've seen now what an Eggers monster movie looks like.
Okay.
And, you know, it's going to be in old English. And it just feels like the kind of movie that I'm going to look at and go, I love the production design. And I love how this movie looks. And it's really cool to literally look at with my eyeballs.
Yeah.
I don't enjoy watching it
because now it's been The Witch, it's been The Northman, it's been The Lighthouse. You know, he's got a visual palette.
The Witch for me is still his best. I was not a fan of The Lighthouse. I liked The Northman.
I like Northman
and then, top 10. And then you know, I'll give Nosferatu another chance, but Gabe, there is I can't say what it is, but there is a horror movie coming out soon that I am so deeply obsessed with to my soul that that's the one I'm excited to talk about with you guys.
Really?
Oh, you screened it.
Art Eyes?
You guys know what it is. No.
It's not Art Eyes.
Oh, I do know what it is.
Gabe, did you see Nosferatu?
I did. I really enjoyed it. I really like it. Yeah. So the thing that I really appreciate about Eggers' approach, and he did this with the Northmen. I mean, I think he's done this across the board, but with the Northmen and with this in particular, is he's really obsessive with his research. And yes, there's so much of Nosferatu that, of course, he's pulling from the original film. But I think he's also taking the time to not deconstruct, but sort of go back to the roots of sort of where these myths and legends and ideas come from, and their actual cultural sort of touchstones in history. And so almost like, it may be pretentious to say like it's a purist vampire film, but I appreciate that up until now, everyone's trying to do a twist on this. They're trying to do, what's their vampire version? How can you evolve the creature or whatever? And to me, it very much felt like he was trying to find all these points that he could touch to and ground it in some sort of belief system or point in a culture in history that sort of that sort of carried this idea of this creature, of this being, of this entity, and making it in a sense a more like pure adaptation that then becomes, you know, sparkling vampires in the Pacific Northwest. And so I really appreciated that. It does, I think, affect the watchability, but the enjoyment whenever you kind of, anytime that you're kind of like, well, I understand where this type of story goes or like where this myth takes you. I think you cannot deny that his aesthetic and the quality of his imagery is top notch. I love watching his films. I love seeing what he's going to do. That opening shot, that's all one shot with the shadow work on the curtain and the shadow work in this is incredible. The way that, like, spoilers, if you haven't seen this, go see it. You can watch it at home now. But at the end, when he's coming into the room and he comes up the stairs and it just follows the shadow of the hand and then the shadow opens the door and it's her. And it's just these wonderful little dreamy type sequences to play with. And I thought the cast was great, too. Like the performances are.
Well, I was going to throw out, you know, who's having the time of his life is Defoe.
Like, Defoe. Yes.
I don't know how he has the time, man.
Yeah. He's a busy guy.
I really enjoyed it. I'm excited to watch it again, given that you liked it more. And I hope I do too. But I'm excited for anything that he does at this point.
Well, and then so that's available on home video if you guys want to. And then the last thing I just wanted to say before the show concludes is that your options at the theater this weekend seem to be thin. The big thing coming out is Flight Risk. None of us have had a chance to see it. They didn't screen it. I think the trailers look really bizarre. The talking point seems to be Mark Wahlberg's hairpiece, because he very quickly rips off whatever toupee it is that he's wearing, and he is a guy who I think they're transporting a prisoner played by Topher Grace, and then Mark Wahlberg takes over the plane that's transporting the prisoner, and it looks kind of gonzo. We were having a conversation about how much we enjoy Mark Wahlberg when he does these types of characters, like not the straight-laced action hero, but more the unpredictable wild card role. Hopefully it's that. I just don't have a lot of good faith in Flight Risk. And more importantly, I'm just kind of bummed at the lack of options at the box office. I don't know why the industry
January
is really
can be profitable. January can be, I mean, we've seen horror movies open to 30, 35 million, you know, which is what I think they thought Wolfman was going to be.
Okay. Gotcha.
But it's not.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard anything? You guys haven't seen Presence, right? Soderbergh's new.
I saw Presence.
You did?
Yeah.
That's coming out. That's going wide this week. Do you have thoughts you'd like to share?
If you don't know the whole bit behind Presence, it's the new film from Steven Soderbergh. It's directed, or it's written by David Koepp, who wrote Jurassic Park. It's basically a bit. I mean, it's basically a paranormal drama. It's a haunted house ghost story, but it is told from the perspective of the ghost. The lens is the eyes of the ghost. It's not scary. It's not meant to be a horror movie. It's not scary. It's like a family drama Where the ghost is watching the, you know, it's closer to, I would say, what was it, a ghost story?
I was going to say that sounds like a ghost story. Yeah,
it's you're watching sort of this family drama unfurl while, you know, and there is sort of a mystery as to who is the ghost, like what is the deal, like, you know, why is the ghost in this house, you know, sort of thing. I found it to be a situation where I think Soderbergh was more interested in, can I pull this off from a technical level? Sean and I, you and I were talking about how, like, I know he's trying new things, and for that I applaud him.
Sure.
But I wasn't particularly ever truly enamored with what was going on with this family. And, you know, it's for a movie that I think is like a hair under 90 minutes. Ooh. It was a watch.
Who's in it?
So,
did you say who's in it?
Lucy Liu, Chris Sullivan are the leads.
Okay.
Chris Sullivan being one of the leads from This Is Us, mm-hmm. which you did some stuff for. And there, everyone's good. Everyone does what is required of them. And there are some really impressive, again, but I'm talking about it from a technical level. There are some really impressive, like, long takes where there are moments where would love to know, like, what the behind the scenes were like. You know, the ghost has to, like, sprint from downstairs to upstairs and then upstairs back down to downstairs. And I just picture, you know, Soderbergh and, you know, with the thing on when you're like sprinting down the stair, you know, with the stabilizer and everything.
Yeah.
So I was more interested watching it. I was always more interested in, I would love to see the behind the scenes of how this played out rather than what was actually going on in the film.
Do you remember the time that Kevin asked Bob Zemeckis how he shot that mirror scene and made it seem really complicated? And Bob Zemeckis was like, it's really simple. You just do this and then you do that. Stupid.
Yeah. Remember that time Bob Zemeckis shut down?
But you shoot down, not you shoot down, but like you say with Soderbergh, he's trying different things, right? But like if he didn't do these things, we wouldn't have No Sudden Move, which came out recently in 2021, which I really loved.
I like that too.
I liked Kimmy that he made. I didn't see Magic Mike's Last Dance, but people kind of raved about it. So, I mean, he's still out there making good movies every once in a while, but then he does Laundromat.
He does his own thing. You always got to respect that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. So, as mentioned, we recorded this episode before the Oscar nominations were announced. By the time you guys are listening to this, you will know what they are. So head to the comments and let us know. What is your hot take on the Oscar nominations this year? What are you disappointed in? What are you really thrilled about? And we will chime in the comments down below. In the meantime, follow us on social media. I've been reading the social media channels for all this time, and I don't think any of us use those channels. I mean, Sean _ O'Connell, this might be my Twitter feed. I'm not on Twitter anymore. So just find us on social media. You know where we are at this point.
And we'll post Sean's address in the comment section. Just please. Just go over.
Social security card number, cell phone. Just call me. I'm around. And we'll be back next week.
Sean's so old. His social security number is 12.
Oh, shut that. Yeah, great. And I have a rotary phone that you can call me on if you want to.
Hello? Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hello, dear. It's Sean here. Can you patch me through to... Uh-oh.
Recording stopped.
Where'd Gabe go? Gabe, come on back in.
Gabe. Hello? Hello? Click, click, click. Operator.
All right, can you hear me all right?
Gabe, please.
Hello.
Did you get anywhere? Did you just end the show?
Hold on, I'm ending it right now. This is the end. Marty Supreme.
Chicago.
Hello?
Hello? Yeah, sure thing. Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.